Welcome back to the New World Next Week. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
I'm James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. Pledge allegiance to paid patriotism on Veterans Day. But first, a story that lit up the hashtag New World Next Week postings. Portugal's government falls and instability is in charge. James, this is kind of a complicated story, so I had to find a source that sort of just laid it out somewhat simply for me. So we'll take it from Stratfor. Portugal's center-right minority government, established just 2 weeks ago, was forced to resign November 10th following a vote of no confidence by an alliance of left-leaning parties. This is just the latest development in a saga created by the fact that no party won enough votes to govern alone in the October 4th general elections. The result meant that the incumbent coalition, headed by Portuguese Prime Minister Coelho, Social Democratic Party, was given the opportunity by conservative President Silva to form a government, despite having won just 39% of the vote. But the minority government would have remained in power only if the three leftist parties, the center-left Socialists, which got 32% of the vote, the far-left Left Bloc, which got 10%, and the Commie Party, 8% in coalition with the Greens, the minority government would have only remained in power if all those parties failed to put aside their differences and unite against the government. But they did unite against the government. So in other countries, this is a point where they would probably call for fresh elections to get a more manageable result. But in Portugal, the constitution prohibits back-to-back elections, meaning new polls can't be held until at least June 2016. Thus, the responsibility for the formation of a government returns once again to the president, who has to decide whether to empower this leftist coalition as a new government. James, the Stratfor article goes on and talks about some of the other options that would probably lead to worse feelings and cronyism against the president. But that's probably the most likely outcome, the first one we mentioned, that he's going to have to sort of empower this leftist coalition. James?
Yes, well, this is one of those stories that I think is it is a good sign in terms of it shows that the electorate truly is looking for change, to use a heavily loaded political word, but unfortunately they're still seeking it through the Syriza-type template. Let's vote in the left party and they'll get rid of this austerity and everything will be better. And I think we know how that script goes. I'm just reading from a Guardian article that's just recently been posted saying this is hardly a Syriza moment, considering that Costa has ruled out any negotiations on debt restructuring or a potential EU exit. But solidarity with austerity-hit Greece is evident in his new unprecedented coalition of broad political stripes. So this isn't Syriza, guys, but it's Syriza, is basically the gist of this. It's just trying to vote in the right deck chairs on the Titanic. I mean, it's worse than useless. But as I say, I think it's important in that it represents a true feeling amongst the public that that this path that they've been on for years is wrong, and hopefully they'll stumble their way towards the solutions that actually matter and not get caught up in the political game. Or at the very least, they'll be disillusioned when their political game masters turn out to stab them in the back like Syriza did with the Greek people. So, I don't know. I'm certainly not putting any faith in this in particular, but I think this is a phenomenon we're going to see a lot more in the coming years as the next wave of the global economic crisis starts to hit. And that's actually going to happen as a result of the dollar bull run that's happening right now. And the dollar is rising. And so all of these countries in the developed world on the periphery are going to start seeing all of those dollar investments getting sucked back out as interest rates potentially rise in the U.S. All that money is going to be sucked out. There's going to be a lot of carnage in developing countries and in less developed countries. So we're going to see a lot of that. And I think on that note, we have another example of some economic political instability happening on the other side of the world from Portugal.
James, I just have the headline and link, but I think you and I have noted off mic that we've gotten to the point now where, didn't we talk about this on New World Next Week? I think we've covered this. We need more archivists, I think. But in Venezuela, they're now liquidating their assets as economic crisis is worsening there. And we can include that link from Zero Hedge. James, if you've got insight on that, I'll gladly take it.
It's just that there's an election coming up there as well. So that's going to play into this. And it's part of this ongoing destabilization that's happening in a lot of different countries. But Venezuela, I think, is probably the next on the chopping block, obviously, and heavily oil export-dependent nation taking a huge hit in recent years.
I'm speaking off the top of my head, but I believe I even saw something about Venezuelans being arrested, you know, sort of quote-unquote elite Venezuelans being arrested. Well, I'll leave that there, and we'll have to put that in the show notes, James. But our second story this week, and it is Veterans Day here in the States as I come to you on November 11th, and because sports ball is our god, whether it's international doping scandals or Mizzou or military-funded propaganda parades, I think our second story this week is perfect for Veterans Day, and we will take it from antiwar.com and writer Jason Ditz. Military spent over $10 million on paid patriotism. You know, when you go to a baseball game, and invariably during some inning break, the team points out a group of soldiers or National Guard members in the stands and tries to get a big round of applause going. That doesn't just happen. A new report from Senators John McCain, Republican of Arizona, and Jeff Flake, also Republican from Arizona, revealed that the Pentagon has spent over $10 million in recent years to keep those shows of patriotism active across sporting events. Whether it's paying for special VIP parking for generals or for some team to show the military's logo on their jumbotron, these programs are overwhelmingly pay-to-play sponsorship schemes. If 20 members of the military are getting the Richard Petty ride-along experience, it comes as part of a $1.5 million annual expenditure. Interestingly, congressional leaders seem to be of two minds about this heavily subsidized pretense of a pro-military environment, insisting it's a waste of money, but largely expecting the teams to continue these programs irrespective of whether they pay for them. That's probably not going to be realistic, particularly in the long run, and while it's certainly a waste of taxpayer money to have the National Guard buying blocks of Red Sox tickets, Congress may be about to learn that in the absence of paid patriotism, there's going to be a lot less VIP treatment coming the military's way. Now, James, we can include the PDF to this and its stunning cover illustration, Tackling Paid Patriotism, a Joint Oversight Report. Now, James, I know you like sports a little more than me, which is to say more than zero. I kind of put organized sports ball down there with organized religion. But are you kind of surprised this report comes from old Madman McCain?
You know, it's funny you should mention that, because that was the exact thought that I had when I started reading this story. I was like, McCain? Why McCain? Why on earth would McCain be involved in this? Unless the Manchurian candidate programming is wearing off and he's finally snapping back to reality or something, but I'm not holding my breath on that count. Anyway, I don't know why McCain is involved in this per se, but it is, I mean, let's put it this way, Bernays would be proud. I mean, this is an operation of which Bernays would approve, I have no doubt. Edward Bernays, of course, for those out there who don't know, the American nephew of Sigmund Freud, and someone you should know about if you don't. Please do look him up. I had an episode on him way back in the day on the Corbett Report that you can look up in the archives, but this is just that type of psychological operation. Talk about bang for the buck. $10 million is chump change right now for the U.S. government. And yet, I mean, think of the effect that this has had. I have no doubt this has been a very successful psychological operation in that way. And I've certainly noticed it from my perspective outside the U.S. I've noticed it in the last several years, the sort of that sentiment of, you know, thank you for your service and, you know, applaud the military people on the plane and things like that. That I've seen more of that from the outside than I did when I was growing up. And I don't have any direct experience of that. Maybe it's the same as it's always been, but it just certainly seems that people are more deferential these days. So I think it's probably had some pretty deep-seated effect there. But I should just say that, thankfully, neither the Chicago Cubs nor the Calgary Flames are involved in this, so I don't really mind.
And the report, again, which we'll include in the show notes, basically breaks down team by team within each sport about what they did and how much money and what exactly it was for. James, I think really when this took off was after 9/11, because the jingoism just went off the charts and everything in America had flag logos and all that kind of thing. And even when you watch the first Super Bowl they had after 9/11, it was just unbelievable. All those things have sort of become normal, I think, in the post 9/11 world. And it's really interesting, I think, how you're talking about how effective it is. Because much like, I think, religion, sports, religion, military, going to put them all together, you're already in kind of a heightened emotional state when you're there kind of rooting for your tribe. So you're already at a heightened emotional state and you're ready to sort of take in all these other little kind of propaganda bits, just as you would be if you're in a heightened emotional state or when you're at a heightened spiritual state, I suppose. But again, we'll implore folks to check out that PDF. It is definitely worth looking at because I would wager a lot of folks are going to find the teams in their towns are involved. And I would just say, at least fortunately, I didn't see any of the Portland teams on that list, James. Let's move now. We'll get off the sports ball field and move to our third and final story this week. And this is where we generally slot in good news next week. We've been trying to give you good news all through 2015 on these episodes of New World Next Week. We haven't been trying. We've been doing it, like Yoda says. Let's talk about the town that took itself offshore and take it via the Independent. While independent traders in a small Welsh town discovered, rather when independent traders in a small Welsh town discovered the loopholes used by multinational giants to avoid paying UK taxes, they didn't just get mad. Now local businesses in Crickow are turning the tables on the likes of Google and Starbucks by employing the same accountancy practices used by the world's biggest companies to move their entire town offshore. Advised by experts and followed by a BBC crew, family-run shops have submitted their own DIY tax plan to HMRC, copying the offshore arrangements used by global brands, which pay little or no corporation tax. This tax rebellion, led by the town's salmon smokery, local coffee shop, bookshop, optician, bakery, could spread nationwide. Crickow residents want to share their tax avoidance plan with other towns in a bid to force the Treasury into legislation to crack down on loopholes, which allowed the likes of Amazon to pay just £11 million of tax last year on $5.3 billion of UK internet sales. A town dominated by independent businesses, some of which have been passed down through generations, Crickow traders recently fought off a high street planning application from a large supermarket chain. So in the BBC Two documentary, The Town That Went Offshore, the residents expressed their anger at companies including Cafe Nero, which has not paid corporation tax in the UK since 2008, despite recording sales worth $1.2 billion. So this documentary was made by a company called Renegade Pictures. It's going to be screened in 2016 as part of BBC Two's Britain's Black Economy season, which explores how different levels of society are finding loopholes in the system, James. That sounds like one of your solutions-oriented episodes.
It does, with the asterisk. So here's the asterisk for this particular story. If you go on reading, you'll find that these people really are incensed about the corporate tax loopholes. So this is their way of protesting in order to get the government to close those tax loopholes so that we can now tax these damn corporations that are trying to avoid the taxes. And it includes such choice quotes as, you know, I would gladly pay more tax. I have no problem with paying tax. It's only that I'm mad that the corporations get to avoid it. So my initial response is to want to make fun of that impulse, but I won't, because it is a genuinely good impulse, and I understand where it's coming from. People want to help other people. So let me direct this to the people in the crowd who still think that, oh, if only I could pay more taxes, this would be the way to help other people in our society. I would just say this. I know it's impossible because of your government indoctrination since the time you were born to think otherwise, but it really is possible. If you want to give money to people, if you want this to happen and you want people to benefit from that, you do not need a monopoly power of control to come and take that money and decide what to do with it. That is not the only way we can think of to organize society. In fact, I'd even venture to say it's not the best way we can think of to organize our society. If you want that to happen, you can make it happen. You don't need that top-down structure of monopolistic control to make it happen. So I like the impulse behind this. I like the idea behind this. I only wish it were being directed towards people taking the initiative themselves to help other people rather than trying to give it to the government who, okay, they'll drop some bombs on brown people and they'll do other things with this money. They'll give some to the bankers and they'll give some to their corporate cronies and maybe they'll give a little bit to the homeless or whatever. No, you just take your money and you give it to the homeless. Problem solved. Suddenly bombs aren't dropping halfway around the world as a result of this kind of nonsense of the way we've ordered society. Anyway, that's a big tangent to go on, but I think this is the heart of this story, that people do want to help other people, but they've just been indoctrinated to believe that only through taxation and giving money to government can this ever happen.
That's very well put, James, and we've been trying to give you good news all through 2015. Hashtag good news next week. I'm going to turn it into its own spinoff series very soon. And a couple of other notes. James, McCormick spices go organic and GMO-free. And I've got a personal note on this. When we were visiting family in West Virginia last month and weren't at our regular snooty Portland kind of grocery stores, we went to the local grocery store there, and actually Cassie even looked. She was like, huh, when did McCormick's go organic? And they did go organic. So they've actually already got a lot of the products out on the shelf, again, showing people voting with their dollars are making companies change their ingredients. Outdoor store REI closing all their stores on Black Friday, and now even H&M stores are getting into the act. This is what Bill Hicks would call going for that anti-marketing dollar. That's a good market. They're very smart. Meanwhile, Boston neighborhood saves itself with community land and gardens. And a little good news, musical note, the Winstons, the band behind what's called the Amen Break, which is a drum break that's been sampled literally thousands of times by David Bowie, NWA, Oasis, Prodigy, thousands more. Those guys actually got paid after 46 years. Musicians got together and took funds and actually gave it to these guys who were never paid for their music. So I like a little musical good news note. Meanwhile, we also, of course, have the long-running hashtag New World next week, where everybody submits important stories, and that's how, James, you and I keep up on these, and we're able to spread this information. So some of the stories we've been watching and updates to stories we've covered more extensively in the past on New World next week: arrests made in 2014 J.P. Morgan hack, the Snoopers Charter, a.k.a. the Investigatory Powers Bill in the U.K. makes Orwell look tame, China ends its one-child policy. Meanwhile, we are editing human genes now with CRISPR, as we've noted on New World next week. And John Ellis, a.k.a. Jeb Bush, he would kill baby Hitler. But how would his family have made any money? There's the California missile test, social media nightmare, or exactly what the military wanted. And the war party wins again as the Senate approves the NDAA. You might remember that as the National Defense Authorization Act. And James, just in closing, a little programming note and a little bit of good news, I suppose. As part of my ongoing fundraiser for Media Monarchy, I'm live streaming hour-long DJ sets every weekday at noon Pacific time. And you can get all the info at MediaMonarchy.com/support. Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, that's awesome. And just for people who don't know, you're ramping up more interviews. You're going to start that Good News Next Week video series. So I hope people are subscribed to your YouTube channel as well. We'll put a little box in the corner for people to do that on YouTube. And you're rebooting Navigating Netflix. And now that Netflix is actually available in Japan, I guess I could potentially, theoretically, join in on that. I'm not going to, but but I could. I don't have any interest in Netflix, but it's here.
You've got film literature and New World Order. I think Navigating Netflix is in some way kind of a partner to that. But yeah, Navigating Netflix was something we kind of started with Tragedy and Hope and Richard Grove and those guys, and we did a couple of episodes, but it was a big production and it never quite got off the ground. I'm going to relaunch it a little more simply. It'll be a one-on-one each month with someone from, hopefully, the Tragedy and Hope community, where they bring a show or a film or something to the table that they want to talk about. We've got Paul Verge of Divergent Films booked for November to talk about House of Cards. And I think we may have someone on in December to maybe talk about one of your favorite films, It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh, nice. I would definitely tune into that. Well, as long as I don't have to sign up for Netflix, maybe I could keep you on someday. But anyway.
No, I think, and actually that'll be something I'll stress. Now we're inside baseball here. I think Navigating Netflix is just kind of a catchy name. It doesn't necessarily have to be via Netflix. I'd kind of think of it as any sort of motion picture, show, television, film that you're kind of interested in.
Awesome.
Navigating Netflix is just the fun.
All right. Well, I hope people check out the rebooted MediaMonarchy.com. 10,000 plus posts there. Something like that.
Yep, a lot.
A lot. All right, excellent. Well, let's do this all again next week. Looking forward to it.
All right, man. Take care.